Hello everybody, welcome back into another episode of Cult Film Cafe. Of course it is me, Jonathan, one of your hosts, and as always, I'm joined by my partner in crime, Kenzie.
Hello there everyone.
So yeah, another episode about a pretty weird film. This must have been the time in the 90s where non-linear narratives were a big thing after the success of Pulp Fiction 1994. On this episode, we will be taking a look at Bryan Singer's 1995 neo-noir mystery film, The Usual Suspects.
The greatest trick the devil ever pulled was convincing the world he didn't exist.
All right, you all know the drill.
And that was how it started. The five of us being brought in on a trumped-up charge to be leaned on by half-wits.
Number one, step forward.
It didn't make sense that I'd be there. I mean, these guys were hardcore hijackers.
Answer my question.
And you hit me in the back. Hello?
What the cops never figured out, and what I know now, was that these men would never break, never bend over for anybody.
You gonna charge me?
You don't put guys like that into a room together.
Let's get back to that truck.
Who knows what can happen?
Well, I figure we owe it to ourselves to salvage a little dignity. Me and Fenster heard about a little job.
My employer requires your services, gentlemen. One job, one day's work. Very dangerous.
12 squad, 10, maybe 20 men. Anybody goes in there is not coming out alive.
Is there a problem?
I want to know why 27 men died on that pier for what looks to be $91 million worth of dope that wasn't there.
This isn't life's in danger.
He saw the devil.
Kaiser Soze!
He mentioned Kaiser Soze.
Who?
Who's Kaiser Soze?
Press 20. Do it now.
There is no Kaiser Soze.
You never knew. That was his power.
He was in the harbor killing many men.
You mention his name again, I'll kill you right now.
How do you shoot the devil in the back?
A gift from Mr. Soze.
You got my whole life in here. Everything I've ever done since I was 18.
Everybody I've ever worked with at a time with.
Keaton always said, I don't believe in God, but I'm afraid of him.
He's here.
Well, I believe in God. And the only thing that scares me is Kaiser Soze. And like that, he's gone.
Now, I don't know why I introduced the film like that, but I forgot how non-linear this film was until I watched it again. And it's just because Pulp Fiction came out the year before, I was like, is this just what the 90s were filled with for like 5 or 6 years?
I mean, maybe, I don't know. What started it? Was it Pulp Fiction that started that?
I think, Reservoir Dogs is technically non-linear as well.
Right. I mean,
it seemed to be just becoming more of a forefront in cinema. It probably happened like decades before, but for us young people, I think films around this time are probably the ones that we'll remember the most.
Oh yeah, Pulp Fiction's very famous, and so is this one. I don't know which one.
You think so?
Yeah, everyone.
I mean, it's a famous film.
Everyone knows this film. Like absolutely. Yeah. I don't know, it's the question of, does everyone seen this film? But you can't lie that this film is not where it's very well known. Like, everyone knows, like, the ending to this film, or the twist of this film, without seeing it. It's like The Sixth Sense, or Seven. It's like, Seven, a little bit less, but especially The Sixth Sense and Usual Suspects. People usually know the twist of the film, even if they've not seen it. It's just that known. It's kind of crazy. I guess if you have that big a twist in a film, it's just going to become like almost iconic and just known in the future, and be like things just get made about that, and it becomes its own thing outside of the film that everyone just knows. And I think that's the same with this film. Who is Kaiser Soze?
Yeah, I mean, talking about Kaiser Soze, Kevin Spacey had a a really good 1995. Not only was he in this and Seven, he was also in a film called Outbreak, all in the same year. That's a pretty decent year of filmmaking there, I think.
What was it with that year where they were like, yeah, we want you to be the killer in both of these films, and it's going to be a twist that you, well, or not a twist, or well, not a twist so much in Seven. In Seven, you don't know the killers until the very end, until he just suddenly shows up. Mm-hmm. And it's like, oh, and it's Kevin Spacey again. It's like, what?
Yeah, I mean, like, this one is an actual twist.
This one is a twist, yes.
Seven isn't so much. It's a shame that there's a bit of a tinge, or quite a big tinge now, talking about Kevin Spacey. It's a shame.
I mean, he's gone, no,
it's totally cancelled.
He actually did make a film not too long ago, and I saw the trailer for it, and it looked awful. I don't know what film. I mean, I don't even know who's giving him work now anyway. So, but it's, even him himself, his acting didn't seem that great in it. So it's just, and now he's been stuck tons of shit. I'm pretty sure he's still got court cases or something. If he's getting something for them, I don't know. I'm not really been keeping up with it, but I do see his name come up sometimes. But nah, he's gone. We won't be seeing him ever in Hollywood ever again. That is it.
Which is a shame. I'm not going to condone what he's done in his personal life, but as an actor, like, incredible. He's been in some amazing films.
He's had a good lineup, and he ends it with like a film like, what, Billionaire Boys Club, which apparently was not very good. Also didn't help when that film was coming out, and then all the stuff that came out about him, it was a bit sus, especially with the film. But yeah, he's Kevin Spacey's had a lot. I mean, there's so many you can name. We've just already named that one year, Usual Suspects, and Seven. There's films such as American Beauty. What other ones is there in the 90s? K-Pax, is that 90s or 2000s?
I think that might have been just 2000.
I keep getting told to watch that. I've not seen it, but apparently it's quite good. And then as you go into the 2000s, there's just so it's in a lot. Even films that are not as well known, like 21, which I quite like, the Blackjack one.
I mean, LA Confidential is another big one.
Yeah, there we go. LA Confidential, yeah.
He was in Glengarry Glen Ross with Big Al Pacino. He also made his directorial debut in the mid 90s. No, he's been in a lot. He voices Hopper in A Bug's Life.
All right.
So he's like, even lends his voice to animation. Not only animation, but Pixar. So yeah, K-Pax is early 2000s.
He's also been in a video game. He was in Call of Duty Advanced Warfare. He was the villain in that. One of these type of villains that are like, you can kind of understand why they're doing it. Another Thanos villain. I think anyway. I'm not entirely sure. I've not played the game, but yeah, I know he was in that. Yeah, he's not a lot.
So it's like his last sort of, I'm going to say mainstream film, but his last kind of Hollywood role or film that a lot of people will have seen is probably Baby Driver, right?
Yes, which it's not a bad film to leave on. I know it's not the actual film he left on, but for...
In terms of what... In
terms of like not...
mainstream audience will know him for.
Yeah. Because Billionaire Boys Club flopped because, not just because I don't think the film was that good anyway, but the stuff coming out about Kevin Spacey at the time fucked that film anyway, so... But aye.
Yeah, anyway, Kevin Spacey is just one of the actors within this film. This is quite a good lineup. I mean, this is probably the first film I'd seen Benicio del Toro in.
Yeah, he's quite young in this one.
Yeah.
I can hardly understand a fucking word he says in the film. Oh my god. I'm so glad. That's a spoiler, but like, oh my god. Yeah.
We've got Gabriel Byrne.
Gabriel Byrne, of course, which it's a very famous actor, but I've just like seen him in nothing.
Yeah, I think you've got to be watching
the right films, the
specific films.
Yeah,
I think. I mean, I don't know the first film that I saw him in, but in terms of films release dates wise, he was in the Coen Brothers. The film's escaped me. That's a film I love as well. 1990, their gangster film, Miller's Crossing.
Right.
So he's like, he's in that, he's like the lead in that, which And then obviously we were just talking before we started recording about Big Giancarlo appearing.
Yes.
Which I never realised until going back to watch it. I've seen this film years ago. But obviously Giancarlo's became kind of like an internet sensation in terms of like roles he's played. Gus Fring.
Yep.
And
he's got
I can't remember what his character is in The Mandalorian, but he's a bad guy.
He's Grand Moff Gideon.
There you go.
Which I think they recently just killed him off, and if they did, I'm not very happy with it. But I'm not talking about the fucking Mandalorian, because Series 3 was iffy, to say the least.
Yeah, rounding out the usual suspects, we have Stephen Baldwin and Kevin Pollak.
Who I don't
they
know.
They are the five.
I've never heard of them before, but yes, that is the five of the usual suspect. When was the last thing you saw this film?
Well, before I watched it for this
podcast.
Probably 10 years ago.
Fair. Well, this is a...
And it's not because I don't like the film.
It's just not a film it's you just... go and watch a lot, is it? If you know the
end.
Do
you know what it is? I think it's one of these films that's got such a big twist, and when the twist is revealed... I mean, it isn't not a rewatchable film, but I think it's on a first watch, because of that, it's so engrossing. But when you find out about it, I mean, it's not a super complicated film in terms of technical things for me, even when I was watching it this time around. It's just, it's a really good, just a really good film. Like, it's well made and well directed, well acted. But yeah, it's not one of those films where I've went, you know, and these non-linear narratives are something I personally love. Like, I love Memento. It's one of my favourite films ever. And, I mean, I don't even go and watch that every year, do you know what I mean? It's one of those films where, because you know what happens, and it has got quite a big twist in it, as these films, unfortunately, these films kind of lose a bit of their luster after you've watched it once.
I mean, yeah, that's very true. And for some people like me, it doesn't even matter, you've not even seen the film, you already know the plot twist, so you go into it not knowing, which would have been, so it would have been interesting if I actually did watch it without knowing, but at this point in time, if you're born past like fucking 2000, you probably know the ending before you even watch it.
Mm-hmm. Which is a shame.
Yeah, it is a shame. This is my first time actually watching the film. I had never seen it before. And I was completely surprised by this film, because it was nothing like I even expected it to be. I thought it was just a bunch of people getting questions for like a whole film. I didn't realise, and they're like, oh, which one are you, Kaiser Soze? I didn't realise it's completely not that at all. And it's more of a kind of somewhat heisty film.
Yeah, like, the whole... I think there's, like, posters and probably covers of DVDs that show them in, like, in a line.
Yes.
Being, like, you know, with the height marks that you would get in a police setting. That's not... I mean, that happens, like, once in the film, and it's very quick.
Yes.
And it's basically they've all got to say a line. And it's a lot different of a film than you think it might be, you know. It is genuinely just... It's about a bunch of guys who have got a specific set of skills that have ended up all together. From the outset, it looks as though this has happened randomly, but as you get deeper into the narrative, you know that it was purposefully put together, this team of people.
Yes. Actually, weirdly, when I was watching it on Prime, I think it's on Amazon Prime, I saw a bit of trivia for that scene. Apparently, the original idea for this film just was literally they first came up with just, they wanted to do a film with a lineup of people. That was there was like no idea to the actual film. They didn't know what they wanted to do, but they wanted to do something about a bunch of people getting brought together in a lineup, which that's where the first concept of the film even came from before they even had anything else. So that's just kind of interesting.
Yeah, I think the name of the film comes from Casablanca as well. Claude Rains' character, It's a part of a dialogue that he says, the usual suspects. I think these people that, I mean, people that love film, make film, I suppose, and Tarantino's one of these, you know, like, very student approach. He's very knowledgeable about cinema and cinema history, specifically the cinema that he likes. It'll be the same for all these people, and you kind of pick up all these wee bits and bobs, and it's kind of funny. We started talking about Kevin Spacey, but I mean, he's arguably the biggest name in this, you know. I mean, he's got his own controversy. Not only that, Bryan Singer, the director, has got his own controversy going on as well. I mean, he arguably became sort of a big, big name in Hollywood. You know, he directed the X-Men franchise, well, the first couple, and then came back and done Days of Futures Past. But he's surrounded with his own controversy from things as well. And yeah, it's a shame when you talk about a film like this. And, you know, some of the parts of it are a bit hard to talk about now, based on sort of things that have came out recently. But yeah. I think what people will be a bit, they might not know. I mean, I suppose if you read about this film and you do a deeper dive for yourself, you maybe do. Kevin Spacey met Singer and Christopher McQuarrie, who I'll just preface just now, is the writer of this film, who most people now will know him as the director who's collaborated with Tom Cruise for the last 10 years on things like Jack Reacher and all the good Mission Impossible films that people say that are better than old Mission Impossible films. I don't know if I agree with that. I mean, we'll see. Dead Reckoning Part 1's coming out soon. I might go to the cinema to see it. It looks quite cool.
It does look good.
Yeah. So yeah, Christopher McQuarrie now is very much directing, but yeah, he wrote a few films. Worked with Bryan Singer a couple of times. Wrote his directorial debut, was one of the writers on that, Public Access. That won, pretty sure that won the Palme d'Or at Cannes, or won an award at Sundance, maybe not Cannes. And because of the buzz of that film, Kevin Spacey spoke to them and was like, I want to be in your next film. And lo and behold, Usual Suspects come around, and must be quite good. If you've got an actor who probably had a bit of buzz, you know, I think it's probably a lot easier to get a film made and get money when you've got somebody tied to it, you know, and it's definitely like, I want to work with you. But no, I think these kind of stories are quite interesting, and it's probably happens quite a lot. Independent film, this was a kind of era of independent film coming back, the sort of early 90s, you know. We preface Quentin Tarantino and films like Reservoir Dogs and Pulp Fiction, but obviously gave directors like Bryan Singer a kind of platform to go mainstream almost, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, this film itself, probably skyrocketed it, everything for him. I mean, like, this film was extremely successful. I mean, just looking at, like, budget alone, like, a budget of about 6 million, box office 67 million.
Yeah.
I mean, 70 million in profit. That's pretty good. Like, it's not the highest thing I've ever seen, but for like a film like that, and it's quite a low budget, but for a film like that, it's a lot of money to make it to the cinema, I feel like.
Yeah, I mean, but I think we try and look at contrasting years, you know. You look at, I mean, this time in cinema, I mean, although like 2023 has been a lot better because films are coming back, I suppose, out of the pandemic, but the films that were kind of dominating cinema prior to that were just these kind of big budget action films, and Marvel has got a lot to answer for. You know, Star Wars came back in a big way, and I just like to remember a time, although I wasn't going to the cinema in 95 to see this, but it's good to see that films like this, people did show up to go and see. And they spent money to go and see it. And I just hope that happens again. You know, I feel as though there's probably films this year that are doing quite well, that maybe wouldn't have. You know, I think people are maybe more willing to give films a chance now, and so I think there's a lot of negativity going towards the MCU at the minute. I think there's like this kind of tiresome. It's like the bottom's kind of fell out a wee bit. It's just too much, and I don't think people are invested in the MCU in the same way as they were. But what's happened now is we're seeing a lot of IP film coming out, like Air and Tetris and Blackberry, and I mean they're doing a Pop Tarts film, I think. I mean, maybe I'm just making that up, but I genuinely think they are making a film about Pop Tarts.
Yeah, they're doing a lot of things.
They're just doing a lot of things and it's not MCU and comic book, but it's got the same kind of feel. I just wish there was a lot more. Like, even the new Greta Gerwig Noah Baumbach script Barbie is based on fucking Barbie. It's IP. I want more independent, or maybe not even independent. I want more. I mean, even as much as I don't really like Ari Aster, but I mean, Bo is Afraid, the film that came out, his newest one. People are taking big swings, and yeah, I want to see filmmakers do that more and more and more. I mean, it won't always work. It won't always work. I mean, but I would like to see it happen more and more. I just think we should, like, it would be good if cinema kind of went away from sort of IP heavy or, you know, mainstream sort of comic book, or like these franchises need to die. Like Fast and the Furious, man, it's got to die soon, surely.
I think 11's meant to be the last.
And I also didn't realise until I was listening to a podcast about Fast and the Furious that they've not actually killed Paul Walker's character off in the film.
He just drove away.
But he's fucking dead.
Ah, to see each other again.
Like, but the problem is he's not going to come back and save the day. So it's like, what's the point of the? It's kind of weird. It was just strange.
Wait in like 50 years when they can like revive.
AI generate him.
Like Frankenstein, he'd be like green and everything.
I really hope that Fast and the Furious isn't going on, like in 50 years' time.
I don't know. I mean. As for
it's nice to see like films like this, you know, $6 million budget, $6-7 million in box office return, you know. It was shown at Cannes Film Festival just out of competition. It was just a screening. It probably screened there just initially as a one off and then got its full release. I just wanted to say that Public Access, Bryan Singer's film before this, won at Sundance when they was a joint winner of the Grand Jury Prize. I knew it was one of the two sort of film festivals that done really well at, but yeah. Money wise, like $6 million, probably not a lot of money in the mid-90s, you know. I mean, you still had blockbuster films getting made. Things like Independence Day, Armageddon, Deep Impact, Twister. Oh, was that the disaster movie era?
Nineties, yeah. Cheesy fucking disaster films. Twister, I actually watched that not that long ago. Like, my goodness, is that what people wanted to watch? Apparently so. They're making a sequel to that, by the way, just newsflash.
What, Twister?
Yep, Twisters is coming out apparently next year.
Is this not the one that's like Bong Joon-ho or what's the guy's name? Park Chan-wook? There's definitely a film called Twisters coming out with one of these Korean filmmakers.
Well, this one, there is a sequel coming out with Helen Hunt going to be in it. Of course, most of the other people are not going to be in it because most of them are fucking dead, but that's just how it works when you make a film like 20, 30 years later. 20. Well, it'll be 1990-odd, so. Yeah. I honestly think the usual suspect that most of the money, like I feel like this would be a big film for word of mouth, where like people are like, oh, have you seen this? You need to watch this. I feel like that would have happened a lot with this film. Just because of the twist. Probably the times people going, oh, I need to watch this, it's got a great twist, and everyone going, oh, don't tell me it's got a twist in it. They always big the conversation. But yeah, so I think that's where it probably made a lot of its money. But one
yeah,
thing
I would say so.
One thing I noticed when watching this film, though, is I didn't think, like, we know, like, I don't know if it's the tagline, actually, but, like, you know the term, who is Kaiser Soze? Is that just a quote? I mean, people do say it a lot in the film. I think it is just a quote.
It's just these names repeated over
Kaiser
and over
Soze,
again.
Yeah. Like,
I actually just wanted to preface, it's not Bong Joon-ho or Park Chan-wook or that, but the director of Minari, which done bits a few years ago, Lee Isaac Chung, he's the guy directing the sequel to Twister.
Right.
I knew it was somebody. Like, I knew it was one of these kind of new breed of sort of Korean filmmakers that were breaking Hollywood. But it's going to be strange. I don't know.
Oh,
I don't know.
I don't even know why they're trying to make a 90s film now, because it's... It'll be completely different. Like, I watched Twisters recently, and it's not a great film. It's enjoyable, to be honest. It is enjoyable, but it's it's just a product of its time completely, 100%. But we'll see. But yeah, as I was saying, as watching this film, I didn't find it super quotable, but there's certain things that really stick out about this film. Like I said, Kaiser Soze's name gets said a lot. So I think if you say to anyone about Kaiser Soze, they know who that is.
I've got two quotes from the film, which I think if you have seen it and are fans of it, it's easy to place.
Yes. What's that?
When they're on the lineup, hand me the keys, you fucking cocksucker.
Oh, right, okay.
And... the greatest trick the devil ever pulled was convincing the world he did not exist.
It's just an alright, that's a kind of decent line. I forgot about that one as well. For some reason, the thing that sticks in my head, it's not even a quote, it's just when fucking Verbal Kent said it, I was like, well, and he started talking about his piss coming out of, like, mucus, and I was like, what the fuck? It's ingrained into my head. That's the main line I remember from that film now. Because it was just so fucking weird. I was like, why did he say that? Ah, that was fucking... Jesus. But aye, like, it's not like super quotable. Like, there's a couple of lines. That's a good line. But mainly, what everyone knows is, who is Kaiser Soze? Kaiser Soze. Who's Kaiser Soze? The thing at the end of the film? And just like that, he's gone. What's that? I can't remember. Is that what it is? I can't remember yeah. What it is, but that line's kind of famous as well.
So that was another thing I didn't realise that was quite prominent in the film until this watch, was the sort of Kevin Spacey narrating the movie.
I didn't know about that either. Yeah,
I said I don't know if I'm a fan of it, in all honesty.
So weird. It's because you're getting them narrating, but then he's telling the story to the detective, but at some parts he wasn't. I'm pretty sure he still gets his narration.
Yeah,
It's a bit odd. Yeah, narration was weird. Not too sure how I felt about it. To be honest, I'm not even entirely sure how I felt about the whole film, to be honest.
How do you feel about the whole bit at the end where he's walked out, and then they've said, I can't remember exactly like what they say in the office, but it's almost as something as like you've got to take a step back and look at the bigger picture, and the detective's starting to look at the sort of big board that they've been piecing together, and then he starts seeing words that have been used, you know, Kobayashi porcelains at the bottom of the cup, and quartet, or you know, Redfoot, something like that. Is that what he's called? It's just, and he just pieces it together as if this is just a ruse, obviously. It's quite a good. I quite like the shot at the end when Kaiser Soze or Virgil Clint is walking away, and he's for a long time, even though he's out of the police station, he's still walking with his kind of weird, limpy hunch. And then eventually it's like his foot straightens and he walks normal, and it's like, yeah. I quite like that. He's like, you can see him, because you obviously eventually now realise that he is the baddie, and he's just been sort of playing everybody off against each other, in all honesty. It takes a long time to get there, though, which is quite good.
I mean, you don't get the plot twist really right until the exact, pretty much, yeah, end of the film completely.
Which I quite like. They've waited right until the very, very end.
Which?
I mean, because even up until that point, like, I mean, if the camera had faded and he hadn't sort of started to walk normally and stuff, and appear normally, and didn't get picked up by Pete Postlewaite's character, who is called Kobayashi, his lawyer. That's probably not his real name, but obviously it's his name in the film. I quite like seeing Pete Postlewaite in movies. He sadly passed a few years ago, but he's in some films that I actually really, really like. And I kind of forgot that he was in this. But see, if you didn't see that end, would you have been fully convinced that it was him? But it's quite, obviously, like, and that's another thing I was going to bring up, the whole narration with Kevin Spacey is, like, after watching it once, you kind of get the sense is they're giving you all the information up front and you just haven't pieced it together until the very end of watching it. It's very Knives Out, Rian Johnson, where he shows you everything that you need to see. But it's done in a way where you don't piece it together until it's all laid out in front of you. And that film kind of feels eerily similar to me. Like, me watching it now, knowing that Kevin Spacey's a bad guy, having him be the voice narrating, it kind of is like a giveaway. You think, oh, is he the bad, like, you could have got to that ending if you knew, but it was done that subtly that you need to get all the way to the end of the film before you know, which is good.
How I feel about the twist, you do not see it coming, and I don't think there's any way that you would have figured out that Verbal Kint was Kaiser Soze. And the reason why that is because they show you what happens, and they show you a false thing that actually happened. It showed you that he was not there, so it couldn't possibly have been him, which of course it makes sense because that's what he's telling to the detective, but I think it's a bit annoying because it throws you off, so you would never probably be able to guess it. I honestly don't think, I think writing this twist is so famous is because nobody guessed this. It's just completely out of nowhere, like, oh wait, he was the villain, how does that even make any sense? And I think that was the kind of whole point. And that's one thing that kind of bothers me about this film, is that this is going to be, I don't know if we're going to completely disagree with me on this, but I just don't think the film itself, I don't think it's that good. No. I think it's good, and that's it. I don't think it's like, because I was going into this film expecting, like, this is a big film, known, this is an amazing film, yeah, it's a really good film, and I kind of go in and watch it, and I liked it, but it's, like, good, but it's got an extremely good plot twist, and that was my thing. I found the film just a bit convoluted, slightly generic, especially nowadays. And so I thought, it was like, yeah, it was good, but that's all I kind of felt about it. And then you get to the twist at the very end of the film, and you do feel that something's not right, even if you didn't know the twist was coming. Something just doesn't feel quite right. And then, of course, turns out it's Kaiser Soze, and it kind of comes out of nowhere. I'm like, okay, it's good. It was a good twist. I would never have guessed that. But at the same time, it just feels weird. The whole film itself is so kind of convoluted. I find it kind of almost silly that Kaiser Soze went about this way of doing this whole kind of crazy thing. And the film works, don't get me wrong, but yeah, I don't know. This film, I just expected it to be better. That's my main issue with this film. I don't know. Hyped up too much, I guess. I think I honestly really feel this film is completely saved by an extremely good twist, especially at the time when you didn't really know a lot of them, although a lot of them were coming, like big twists and stuff like that. So yeah, people watched and were like, "What? That's insane!" That kind of goes into the rewatchability. It's most people I've been ever spoke to about Usual Suspects, including like my dad, says you can only watch it once. It's either you can only watch it once or you watch it twice, and you don't really watch it any more than that. I don't know anyone who's this is their favourite film, stuff like that. I'm definitely not interested that much in going for a rewatch it. I don't know about other people. I bet there's some people who do quite like the film, but it's one thing I've never heard about. This film especially I've heard is not a rewatchable one. It's like you only watch it once or you only watch it twice. That's pretty much what I've heard of film. So I would probably say it's not a rewatchable film unless you're going back after like a first watch. But it depends. Maybe some people actually quite like the film a lot. So that might be based on preference. But for me, I would probably say it's not for me. And I wouldn't say that it is.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, if you're looking at that, like, rewatchable, I mean, I think time-wise, I mean, looking back, I mean, it's about an hour and 40 so minutes. Like, it's for the type of film it is, it's relatively short. I think if you made a film like this now, it would be an hour longer. It's kind of strange, and it would maybe have kind of more moving parts, but then again, it would probably have a much bigger budget. That's the kind of the way cinema is at the minute. Everything's half an hour longer than it needs to be, I think, these days. But that's just my opinion. Critically panned. No, panned. I mean, Roger Ebert gave it 1.5 stars.
What, really?
1.5 out of 4, yeah.
Really? Was it? I mean, wow.
He's the famed film critic, like, in most people's eyes.
Confusing and uninteresting. See, the thing is, to the degree that I do not understand, I don't care. He also did the film Most Hated Films. Wow. Like, the thing is I actually kind of agree with him it's somewhat, like, not uninteresting. I think that's a bit harsh. But it is confusing, and I wasn't super fully into it, like the whole film. But I that is extremely harsh. It's not that bad.
And then obviously you look at Rotten Tomatoes, it's 88% on the
Everyone else seems to like it, yeah.
96% audience score.
It's too
high. I'm going to blow your mind. So Metacritic, we don't ever really talk about Metacritic because... it's the harshest of harsh when it comes to movie ratings, but it's got a 77 out of 100 based on 22 critic reviews and an 8.7 user score, which I'm guessing is the same as audience score.
Right.
It's very high.
For Metacritic, anyway, yeah.
I mean, you just look at it as...
it's odd.
It's not like
that's crazy.
I mean, I don't necessarily think that this film. I mean, I think there's similar films that came out around about the same time, and I don't think it's really got a huge legacy. Culturally impactful. I mean, I think it probably had a moment at the time just based on the kind of type of film it was going to be like. Hung on this kind of cliffhanger narrative of who is Kaiser Soze.
This film will like pretty much always be known. It did have a kind of impact. The who is Kaiser Soze thing is still known to this day. Actually, kind of funny. I was just looking there. Before the film came out, they actually did do like a kind of marketing thing by word of mouth of who is Kaiser Soze.
Yeah,
and it plastered it on like billboards and buses and stuff like that. So it was also a marketing tagline. I didn't know that. That doesn't surprise. The word of mouth thing does not surprise me at all. I honestly feel like that was probably where this film succeeded best in its marketing.
Yep. Also, I mean, it's not controversial, this film.
No.
Doesn't really explore controversial things within it. I mean, there's a couple of controversial people attached to the movie.
Yes, which we have talked about.
Which we have talked about at the start. Yeah. Yeah, I'm a bit with you. I mean, I think probably when I watched this film for the first time, I thought it was probably a really masterful piece of cinema. And now, I suppose, reflecting back on that and looking at it a second time, I think watching so many good films in a shorter period of time like we've been doing for the podcast, it's a lot easier to kind of look at films and go, fuck, there's far better films and filmmakers. So yeah, I'll probably watch this film again, but it's probably going to be a while.
Another thing for Legacy is it did get a remake, an Indian remake called Chocolate. In 2005, it was panned. It was in Hindi and it was critically panned. That's all it says about it. So it's probably not worth checking out. Tend to happen. It's a Bollywood version of the film, I guess. It's fucking. I guess that could have been all right.
Yeah, I think I do like this one. I still like the film. It's just I don't think it's as good as I thought it was.
Yes.
I mean, and there is some funny parts, and I suppose whereas like, which I maybe never got before. Like, there's a few scenes in this film that kind of had me sort of laughing. Like, the lineup part's quite funny. Quite like it, but that was like bloopers. It was meant to be serious, but apparently Benicio del Toro kept farting when they were in the room, so it just kind of got a bit out of hand, and obviously left that sort of comedic element in.
Why is he so hard to understand in the film? I really just...
It was just a choice that he made.
So difficult.
Film. He is very hard to understand.
I had to turn the subtitles on because it was just really, it was really difficult. It's hard. Even in like, if I was in like a loud room with like a big speaker, I think I still probably wouldn't have understood what he was really saying. I think that's why they kill him off first.
Possibly. Anyway, that's probably enough on The Usual Suspects, I think.
Yeah, probably.
We've covered all the bases that we normally would. So it's now just down to the nitty gritty of what would we give it out of 5 of them popcorn buckets.
Do you want me to go first?
You can go first, yeah.
So it's a 3.5. And I've had this in my head since pretty much. I thought about it a lot after I watched it, and I watched it about maybe a week ago now, maybe 2 weeks. I don't even remember. But I'm dead set. I think 3.5 is as high as I can go. Honestly, this film could maybe even go lower to like a 3. It's kind of, I don't know. I did like it. I wasn't hugely into it. But I think the twist does give it a little. It does give it a bit of a projection. But I don't think it gives it as much as it probably a lot of people think it does for the film, because people seem to, a lot of people think this is a great film, like, oh, who's Kaiser Sozi? Oh, I think it's a 3.5. It's good. I did enjoy watching it, but I was surprised that it was not better. I was expecting a better film.
Yeah, that's fair. I'm probably going to give it a 3.5 as well. I really wanted to give it a 4, but I don't think it's got, I mean, even the writing, like, I like Christopher McQuarrie's, like, idea and script for this. I think that's probably the strongest element to this film for me. One day I might write a film as good as this, you never know. But I just don't think that can get me all the way to a 4. As much as I would like to give it a 4, but no. I mean, I think if somebody asked me to just rate this film based on how I viewed it before rewatching it, I might have gave it a 4 out of 5, but I think kind of looking at other films we've done, I think a 3.5 is fair. If it just had something extra to put it over the top, I could have got to a 4, but
yeah,
it just doesn't have that extra something that I would like to see. Do you know? I know that Kevin Spacey's performance is good, and I've got no qualms with him winning an Oscar for this performance as a supporting actor. Absolutely not. I would have liked to have seen something a bit more over the top. Maybe that would have been the detriment to the film, and maybe that's why the film works, is everybody's kind of doing their own thing, and I'm not sure. But yeah, a 3.5. I'm going to stick with a 3.5 as well, I think. So now it comes down to whether we think this is a cult film or not, and if so, would it be on our lists of top 100? I think it's hard for me to say this is a cult film.
I don't think it is at all. It's too known. It's really too known. I think most people either have seen it or know kind of what happens. Who knows the twist? Well, everyone knows the twist, of course. But like, yeah.
I think the problem with this film is this, what's going to be interesting is when we start hitting films like Pulp Fiction and Reservoir Dogs and things like that, and whether we agree that they're cult films or not, which we'll save for those episodes because they're still to come. But yeah, I mean, I don't necessarily think that it's not a cult film just because people know what it is, but I don't think it's got enough sort of its own kind of thing. Like like I said in the Cone, when we talked about Barton Fink, about Coen Brothers, they've got that sort of tinge of cultiness regardless of how successful the film is. I think Tarantino is very much in the same mould as well, as regardless of how lauded and well reviewed his film is and how good it is and how many people see it, because it's a Quentin Tarantino film, there's that kind of tinge of independent cinema, that kind of cultiness to him as well. So it'll be interesting to see how we feel about those films, and there's a bunch more on the list coming up that will be interesting to see how we feel regardless if they've made loads of money or not. I mean this did really well at the box office. It was a low budget. I'm quite happy to say it's not cult as well. That is it for this episode of Cult Film Cafe, and as always, if you would like to give us a little bit of support, you can go and follow us over on the Instagram at Cult Film Cafe. And we sometimes go live on Twitch to do these. We are at Cult Film Cafe there and on Twitter as well. But yeah, this wasn't as good as I thought it was going to be, this film, which is a bit of a shame.
Same.
But yeah, is it goodbye from me?
And it's goodbye from me.
Podcast out.